Welcome to this episode of I Am. Sparks, thanks for joining me. Sorry if I've pulled you away from something slightly more interesting.
Amazingly, you haven't, which is, I'd love to say a rarity, but it's not.
We've been waiting by your phone for the call this morning. I know you have.
All of the last week.
Yeah, and now you're in for a ride, a roller coaster ride, because I've picked a topic for you and I to discuss, and it's one we're hearing a fair bit about from guests that we're interviewing who speak about us as energy and energy vibration, speaking a lot about raising our vibration or the lower frequencies and the higher frequencies. So that may be an alien concept to some or maybe not to others, but I think when you get into it, it's something that's very relatable, and actually it's probably something we're experiencing a lot. So I wanted to get thrown into that. Where do you sit on energy vibrations?
I'm going to put myself in the relatively alien to me.
Yeah, okay.
So as in, I've heard, obviously, from the guests we've spoken about, but in other places as well, but I've not got a great depth of knowledge on it.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't necessarily claim to have that either, but I think it's worth diving into and exploring. And I want to start, if you will, with the great Einstein, who I think has a bit of credibility, certainly in the scientific space.
Yeah, wonderful player.
He was a good player. He was a great player.
Absolute magician.
In his field. So what he said is everything is energy. That's all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way. This is not philosophy. This is physics. So that was coming from him. It's quite interesting to start with a very scientific look at it, which I think is quite cool. Other ways of looking at it from that scientific side that I've explored a little bit is that at the base level of it, or a deeper level of who we are beyond, you know, the nature of cells and everything, when you reduce down even further, is it comes to pure energy that's always in vibration, never still. And everything's vibrating at different speeds. Thoughts and what have you have an impact upon those vibrations. And when we focus on certain thoughts, or when we get more habituated to certain feelings, we can lock ourselves into that cycle, which almost embeds those thoughts into our subconscious and kind of solidifies or creates a dominant energy vibration, if that's where all our attention's going. It creates this kind of dominant energy vibration, which becomes a little bit of who we are, whether it's personalities or certain qualities about us, or the things we always do, or the way life always looks, kind of gets locked into that space. So, but how are you with that as a beginning?
Yeah, I'm all right so far. No, I think I get, you and I have had some conversation stuff where we understand that there's limits to what we can see and what we can understand, even with technology and everything that it, as it stands, is that eventually you reach a point of not quite sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things, the leap that I found quite powerful, is to just see myself as energy and an energy state right here and now, as opposed to that story of being a physical, you know, kind of being in a kind of identity as such, you know, that idea that this is who I am because of what I've been through, what I've done, you know, what I've built, this is past, this is future, but to go more on a sort of state of energy right now, and that being more aligned with the experience I'm having right now, which kind of makes things, I think, a lot more interesting and exciting, because at the level of that energy, things can shift quite quick. Whereas on the level of physical, everything seems to take time. You know, the idea that someone's wronged me and I'm in this sort of like mood, and they need to apologize in order for me to feel better about it, but I'm not sure if I ever will. So this is going to take days and weeks, and who knows, versus the idea of this is the energy state I'm in at the moment. This is the feelings it's inspiring. These are the thoughts it's inspiring. If I work on the energy state very quickly, I can be in a very different kind of reality. And it looks a little bit to me like children, you know, you see they get all upset and then the next moment they're just buzzing, which isn't really such a big opportunity for, or hasn't been for me, if I'm locked in that space of this is what everything has to mean on that kind of physical sort of logical level. And even in terms of performance, when you're out in the field, you know, that feeling of you make a mistake, you throw a ball on the floor, you drop a pass, you miss a kick. And there's this kind of period of, I need to get over it, versus understanding, okay, this has triggered a certain energy state in me. How can I work on the energy? And very quickly, you can be back in the game and off you go. Now, that feels like have I gone too far?
No, not at all. But I think this is where you and I not necessarily differ, but we have our differences. And I think we're getting into that realm where you've got such a broad spectrum of individual traits and beliefs and experiences and situations across the whole population of the planet that I think it's difficult to go anywhere without kind of having that whole, you, whatever serves you and helps you live your life in the way that you deem right, because that again is another spectrum of what people believe and stuff. It's whatever works for you. Now, just taking what you said there, you probably want to try and maybe explain a little bit what you mean by working on your energy versus changing your mindset.
Yeah.
Because there's one where there's convincing yourself that things are different, and there's one where making things, or where you're trying to actually make things different. Because that's a big difference in the two.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a good question. I think maybe the idea that you would be more energy brings into space this, or brings into play this capacity to work inwards on yourself, to have direct access to the way you feel, to have direct access to a degree of mastery over the way your mind works, as opposed to the other way, seeing ourselves as physical beings that are being shaped by the outside, is more that everything needs to come from the outside in. So in order to change the way you feel, you need outside permission from somewhere, like I said, you know, you've been wrong, so you need that apology before you're gonna move on. Or if you've made a mistake, you need to understand everything about it before you can move on. Or you need confirmation an affirmation that everything's good from the outside before you can change your inside. Or even if you want to feel good, you need certain experiences to make you feel good, or certain experience will make you feel bad, versus the ability to, if you like the expression, fill your own cup. And so we hear quite a lot about things like forgiveness, which kind of works on both sides, if you know what I mean. It helps the other person, but it also helps you. It's like that sort of opportunity is your ability to work on your own energy by, we hear about meditation or breathing or relaxation or gratitude or these kind of things, which are themselves just different energy states or pathways to a shift in energy, which can work very, very quickly. And I think that's kind of the way I would explain it, that seeing ourselves as energy takes away this kind of idea that it's been sort of created by the outside and therefore needs to be solved by the outside. But it's a constantly evolving opportunity that's readily available for us to tap into. And albeit at times when we're in that sort of really stuck feeling, that pattern and that cycle of always feeling this and the blockages we get and the anxiety or the fear and the repetitive thoughts and whatever, those can be difficult to shift at the beginning. But I think understanding that you do it, you can have a massive role in that yourself, opens up the door, I think, to major opportunity going forward. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would, mate, there's nothing there that I disagree with. I think it's always going to be a combination. I think it's in I think it's stealing it from Matthew McConaughey, although I don't know where he got it from, but no matter what or how what sort of lens you view the world through, you have to understand that you've got your hands on the wheel to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
you've got control. And to feel like, oh, it sometimes gets referred to as the victim mindset, but I don't necessarily think that that's as accurate as it could be. But to feel that everything's being done to you and you've got no control or responsibility and you're just there like a tennis ball in a tumble dryer being banged around and you just, that's your experience. There's always something that you can get some control of.
Yeah.
Whether, as you said, whether it's you start by going internal or whether you start by looking at like the small low hanging fruit that you can get stuff on. Now, you and I work in different areas with this, where my experience with working with the physical is, to a degree, you've always got control of when you go to bed and what yeah. you eat.
Yeah.
So those are things that's always easy to try and make a start on. But I don't think we're necessarily looking at different messages. I think we're just looking at that there's a real broad menu of ways that you can approach, if you want, improving your experience or wanting your experience to be better of what we call life. Then I think it's just, this is another sort of access point into it.
Yeah, and I think, so this is a good time to bring in this little, which we'll link in the episodes, so people can look at it. It's an interesting little, what's called a map of consciousness or a spectrum. It was developed by a guy called David R. Hawkins. I thought it was, yeah.
So no, it is. I'm looking at it, so it's definitely Hawkins, according to the one I've got.
And I'm not going to go into how it was measured because this is open to scrutiny, but really just to explore the concept of it. So he's put energetic measurements to these different emotions, which he's created this big sort of scale of. And you've got the lower values at the bottom all the way up to the highest value. Now, the lowest one he's got down there in terms of lowest emotional sort of space is shame and humiliation. And the highest he's gotten there is this concept of human enlightenment or pure consciousness. And in between, he's got lots and lots and lots of different, you know, predominant emotional states. But the bottom one is shame and humiliation, which is really interesting for me immediately, because it's always been my biggest fear in terms of outside of the idea of, let's say, death, for example. Death in sense being that ultimate humiliation. And so when it's not been about life or death, it's almost been as serious as life or death in terms of whenever you're out there doing something, the idea that you should fail horribly would be the ultimate humiliation. And it's interesting because I can recognize straight away times I've formed deeply in that emotion, and it's been very, very limiting. In fact, it's almost been a sense of so little impact, if you know what I mean. And it's funny that also, because in a changing room, for example, before the game, there's quite a lot of that sort of space. If I, you know, run you through the bottom five, six emotions in there, being shame, guilt, apathy, grief, and fear. But you look at what's going on in that environment, and a lot of those are quite prevalent, I think. You know, everyone's worried about, you know, looking stupid, being the one that lets everyone down in that guilt and that can be blamed. Everyone's in that space of, I don't want to miss this opportunity because I'll never get over it. The grief and regret, the fear and anxiety of what if this happens? What if this happens? I won't be able to handle it, which might lead to that humiliation and what have you. It's all tied in there. That for me is a very familiar space. What about you in there?
No, I would, I mean, to look at that, there's certain things you have to agree to begin with, to buy into that paradigm of this is what it is. So you have to, obviously, part of you has to believe that enlightenment is something. You have to believe in it. And then you have to, then also you start buying into words. As soon as you give something a name, it will either work for someone or it won't. Now, I agree that there's, if you take the changing room example, there's all sorts of emotions in there, but you're overlapping this over the top of that. These are based on when you're talking about self-fulfillment and actualization at the top of hierarchy of needs. So it's also, like we've spoken a little bit about before, that this doesn't apply to when you're fear for your own life, or if you're struggling to find food, or you have nowhere to live. This is all based around that, where, like you said, you may feel that shame and humiliation, but it's to the ego. It's not actually that you are, you know, when you talk about that death, it's the death of the identity, not the actual physical death, which again changes it again. But I think I would say that all of the kind of names of levels and predominant emotional states that David Hawkins has put in this are part of the human experience to a degree, that in order to understand everything that's going on, would you not need to be exposed to all of these at some point to understand what they are, whether you want more of those or you definitely do not want to go anywhere near that emotion again and do your best to avoid it?
Yeah, I think so. If it was more linking this to performance, for example, or even just the type of life experience that comes with it. But certainly from a performance perspective, I recognize in the bottom half of this table, which is like you said, for the labels we use, everything from shame, guilt, apathy, grief, fear. It's then got desire and craving, which is a really interesting one, that should be quite low down, and anger and hate, and even pride and scorn. Now, all of those, according to this table, belong to the survival paradigm that we've been talking about, the shift from survivor to creator. And I'm not saying this aligns with what we're talking about, but it is interesting to me that quite a lot of, when we mention about the team talks that we speak about, can often be about generating some of these emotions. Because, as you said, you know, from a performance perspective, they can be quite powerful because they're aligned to that physical survival perspective. You know, that when you're in those spaces of being physically absolutely in need of survival, the craving of, food, or the fear of a threat, and it makes you move quick and it makes you do things. But it's, I think the idea here is that in that space, it's not necessarily, it's reactive and it's quite unconscious. But it's the one that we often pull up on. I often think because there's not so much understanding or familiarity with what comes above those. I think we're all quite familiar with acting through a lot of these emotions. And that's, it aligns with the idea that I hear quite often, that we are often in our lives in survival mode. You know, some people say up to 90%, some people say 70%, but in survival mode, that we're often in and around these emotions. And yet the top half of the table, as it were, is more neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, love, joy, peace, and at the top, the enlightened one, which we'll leave for a moment. But those ones, for me, when people talk about raising vibration, I guess that's the shift we're talking about into an experience of life, which is maybe more, as we've spoken about, less logical, more magical.
I think it ties in a little bit with when you're talking about there, where we're in survival mode, and we've spoken a little bit about the two dominant halves of the central nervous system, where you've got parasympathetic and sympathetic. And sympathetic is the fight or flight, which you would associate predominantly with, like you said, the survival paradigm part of this, of the diagram, where you are on edge and everything is very focused on a narrow topic. You've got something very specific that you're getting fired up for. Now, it's super useful, but only where it's appropriate. And it's not appropriate for 90% of our lives, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And then what, and also above that, where you start move, like you were saying there, where you move further up the graph, it's definitely more associated with parasympathetic, rest and digest, more open, more creative, less of the adrenaline and cortisol and stress and you know, fire and brimstone, and more of the relaxed and open and switched on, where it's definitely more of a creative state to be in.
But I think also this to me rings that in that survival space of all these things, it's individual. Whereas as you move up, I think it starts becoming collective. So as you mentioned, the idea about being in that, you know, fear space, that guilt space, shame, it's all about what about me. Now you can create that within a team to be what about us. But ultimately, I think those emotions and those energy states and vibrations, if you will, speak to a more separate individual experience. Whereas the love, joy pieces you just said are more connecting and more, for example, inspiring. I'm not sure how inspiring it is if you go into a workplace, let's say, for example, into a team, and the first message you get is you got to knuckle down here or you're out. You know, it may be that that's motivational to get you to go and do something, but in terms of inspiring, is it sustainable? Is it something that brings you that sense of, you know, being supported, cared for, and able to go and fully seek what's, you know, your best, as it were?
No, mate, I don't think anybody would say that it was, but I think there's, like you said, there's things higher above this where are much more focused on where that engagement and connection with other human beings is going to take place. And, you know, although I'm sure there's occasions where bonding over fear or grief and stuff create very strong connections.
Yeah.
They definitely may not be as, well, let's just say they're going to be different. They're going to be different to when you bond over things of love and acceptance and, you know, courage.
But I'm gonna, I think that's a bang on point. And one of the points I think just before going to that is that so many of these, I think we already know intuitively that shame, humiliation, guilt, and fear and anger, they're not high performance spaces because, or they're stress spaces. We've been speaking about that survival stress, and that they're not helpful because it's kind of what you do on the field. If you want to put someone off, if you're trying to get into someone's headspace when they're in the field, you're kind of like, I need to throw them off their game. What do? If you're, you know, in a slightly toxic space of wanting someone to not feel very good about themselves, you try and humiliate them. You try and make them feel that shame. If you want them to feel, you know, not great in a performance space, you want them to feel guilty about them. You know, I'm just thinking about me trying to kick a ball on the field and having members of the opposition 10 meters away saying things like, oh, if you miss this, you're going to lose it for your team. It's all going to be on you. Or, you know, trying to say, oh, you're useless. You're nowhere near as good as so-and-so. Or, yeah. And you're
listen, I've apologized for saying that when I brought the tea on. And I don't know why you need to keep digging it up.
Oh, well, it wasn't inspiring. But you see, it's like, it's quite obvious. I think we know it. We know how to get into people's and bring their vibration down, or
but I think you
bring their vibration down.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But when you talk about it in a fixed environment of professional sport, albeit a microcosm of society in certain ways, it's almost magnified in a caricature, because you wouldn't. Let's say you're in the shops and you're going to go and reach for a product off the shelf, and someone takes the last one. Your thought is not, I'm competing with you. I'm going to humiliate you and try and put you off picking up that product off the shelf. As funny as it might be, there's a concept, but it's like there's certain things that, like, as you said, you almost feel like it's not. I wouldn't say it was appropriate, but almost expected.
Yeah, part of the game, part of
accepted.
The game. Yeah.
Isn't that okay? There's going to be a degree of this in there because it's a very, very narrow pursuit within life.
But I think also to say it's part of the game, as I just said, would be a suggestion that everyone in there is enormously grounded and balanced, and that we've all agreed, yeah, this is fine. But there's no people are trying.
But you don't know why people are doing it.
No.
That's the big one, is like very few will be just like, I'm super happy with everything I've got going on at the moment. I'm going to be a dick to this guy whilst he's taking a kick. Yeah, it's normally coming from other people are feeling insecure. They're feeling on edge. They're feeling challenged. They're feeling unhappy.
Yeah. So this is perfect sort of what just about I was going to go into before that, in terms of the separating emotion. According to this table, like I said, I'm sort of using it as a way of beginning a conversation, is that all those lower vibrational things and the higher vibrational sort of opportunities are separated by this one in the middle, which is courage. And the way of explaining this on the map is empowerment. And I think when you mentioned about bonding over things like grief, is that it takes courage to open up, and that the capacity to open up when you're closed and individual in all the ones below, when everything's about you and it needs to be safe for you or you and your tribe and everything, to open up the doors and share and offer and to open anything takes courage, enormous courage. And I think that when you say bonding over grief, I think that is part of that courageous shift, which then becomes a loving interaction. But for me, that courage, as you mentioned, with insecurity, the sense, which I think is hugely under a lot of the survival emotions, is undoubtedly this idea that I'm not enough. The very sense of being mortal is a kind of sense that I'm not enough. Yeah, when there's this potential opportunity to regard ourselves as immortal or infinite, and yet we're sort of held by these mortal, finite beliefs or kind of ways of seeing life. It, to me, that is going to create this sense of I'm not enough, I'm unworthy, I'm not deserving, and those same sort of senses are behind a lot of those difficult performance emotions, is going out in the field. And like you said, the insecurity of being out there thinking I'm not worthy of getting this kick, you bring yourself to a sense of maybe I can be. And then someone in the opposition says, I've seen you practicing. Yeah, you'll miss this. Wind is strong. Do you know what I mean? They're touching on that. You're not worthy. And the courage to explore that space and take a leap into that worthiness for me, and to open up against maybe some of the things we've learned or be conditioned with when we're younger, you know, to put yourself back in the saddle after a humiliation, to explore humiliation when it's taking place, to sit there in anxiety and fear, to do the thing that, you know, that it just feels out of reach to do. To do that most courageous thing in any moment feels like it's what opens the door to the upper levels of this, to where actually there is love, joy, and peace available as performance kind of inspirational forces. You know, like the zone of being on a rugby field, being like you're just in a loving, peaceful state, but you don't get there without having the courage to walk on the field when you're in the change room telling you out there is just hell, full of threats, humiliation, potential downfall, and yet the courage to just walk on there and open up to the opportunity is what allows for those, you know, those life changing states and experiences.
I think it's probably relatively sort of fair to say that that's something that most people will feel at some point, that whatever path you're on has got you as far as it's going to get. And then you'll start getting the same message at you over and over again, that if you want to go break the plateau or go somewhere new, then you can't keep repeating this cycle. And that's true within sport and other things, is that you'll only be, if you only ever allow yourself to do certain things and not go beyond that point, then you won't reap any of the rewards and the experiences that lie beyond that point.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, we've got a number of people that you and me have been very close to and are very close to over the years that have maybe we've seen getting that message time and time again in one way or another. And some have reacted to it immediately and you've just seen them flourish. And others have kind of gone, no, I need it to be a slightly bigger push. No, I need it to be a bigger push. And eventually those pushes get so large that you're almost taken out of the equation. So as you're saying, that courage to listen to what your gut instinct and your intuition is telling you. So listen to yourself, but also realizing that maybe you're coming up against the same challenges in life, in your experience, and that it's time to start thinking, okay, well, where's do the opportunities lie? Yeah. What's the next thing that I can try? And everybody's on that journey of trying stuff. Does it work? Yes, keep doing it. Does it work? No, don't do it. But maybe remember it might be useful later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think hugely that you can't have courage without, you can't just be given courage. You're just in that space of making that choice that feels irrational or unsafe. But I guess that's something you have to navigate yourself. But it's amazing. I think that we've been speaking about the survival opportunity or the survival state and the opportunity to shift into creator, but it seems to be separated by this space. There's courage, and then just above it, there's kind of trust. And I think both of these, it feels quite correct. We're speaking about that ability to, or that opportunity to relax when everything is saying survive, tense. Yeah, we'd speak about that ability to relax and move slower and move easy and take things in and breathe deeper and loosen off when everything is saying the opposite. And it feels like it's that courage, but that's the shift when suddenly the thoughts that are more based in trust and optimism and forgiveness and acceptance and love and reverence and serenity and joy or whatever, they're given a chance to come through. Whereas in that tense space, like we keep saying, maybe, when you're on the field and someone says, when you're at your absolute best, how does it feel out there? Not many people would say, I feel so hateful and vengeful and tense, and I just want to get it over and done with. It's more a sense of, like you said, there is a serenity, a joy and a peace and an ease about it all. An effortlessness and a trust for sure.
And I think it looks that way on the outside looking in. As we've spoken about, you and John and I being sports nerds, have watched all sports across the years, and the performances that you're attracted to is when whoever's doing it just looks like they are completely in the zone, that they're exactly where they need to be. They're having the time of their lives. That's what's attractive about it.
Yeah.
Not the knees quaking, nail biting. Oh, I'd be doing anything to be away from here anywhere else. That's not, it doesn't fit that kind of beautiful daydream imagination of what it would be if you were in their shoes.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I think also just in terms of mentioning about the experience of life is a bit different as you move. I'm just, yeah, like I said, we're using the scale, not as in any way there's any truth to it, just as a start of some ideas. But it is to me quite interesting that some of the survival stuff at the bottom, there's the experience, the life experience seems to be sort of things like enslavement and destruction and aggression. And yet some of the ones higher up seem to be more revelation and release and transcendence, which are very different life experiences. And again, speaking to what we talk about logical, the idea about things like those survival ones are quite logical experiences. They're quite sort of like, this is how life is, this is how it's going to be. But the higher up ones, I think, are those more spontaneous shifting ones, which I was maybe talking about at the beginning or trying to get to at the beginning, that when you're in that survival things take long time because that's how the logical looks, the linear and the logical. Whereas in that other space, when you're, let's use the example of being in a zone on the field, things move at speeds that you just can't believe. You don't even know what's here, what's now, what's before, what's after. You know, you don't know where people are. You don't, it's just all messed up because the experience is shifting so quickly and so powerfully, whereas it feels like more of a trudge. And that tends to be the story I think I get in my head when I'm in survival mode is, oh God, here we go again. You know, here comes the this and this and this and this and this, the steps of the process, whereas the process in those more subtle and less sort of gross, the more kind of movable and yeah, less dense experiences of life, everything does feel like it's a problem. Anything does become possible as opposed to everything's a problem further down.
Yeah, and I think it harks back to what you said at the start, which is this is something that you can only do for yourself. You can support an individual that's maybe hanging around at the bottom of this map of consciousness and struggling with some of the emotions and the energy states that are down there, but you can't do it for them. You can't move them up into different places. If someone's in a position where they want to go somewhere new, then that work has to be done by the individual.
Yeah, definitely. But it does, I think, speak to that concept of raising your vibration and not that there's necessarily a correct way to live life, that you should raise your vibration, but it does tend to feel like when people are in lower vibration, you want out.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas when you're in the higher vibration, no, not many people are saying, geez, can you bring me back down, please?
No, but everybody knows people that feel, for whatever way you want to describe it or word you want to use, the people that you want to be around the most are normally the ones that are probably, in this case, we would say probably vibrating at a higher frequency.
Yeah, and I think
to use the terms of this. Yeah. But if not, it's just, you know, in other words, it's that person that just feels awesome to be around.
Yeah, definitely.
It's and the same way of saying it.
We can move into the space of law of attraction at another time. That feels pretty much like we've exhausted that one. Now
we need to definitely link this diagram, otherwise it's going to make no sense to anyone.
But that was really, that was quite an intellectual, thoughtful thing.
Yeah. Do you think we fooled them?
I'm not entirely sure what that was about. I can't remember a huge amount of what was being said. Part of me felt like it had some order and some shape to it. I have to admit, I think it's really exciting. Just the idea that as an energy vibration, in quite a quick time, we can move up that scale. And once you get up that scale, if that's how you want to view it, those upper echelons are definitely the more surprising, the more wow, the more revelatory in terms of, you know, to use a coin, an old expression, what I've been looking for is where I've been looking from. I've been banging on the door from the inside almost. How do you like those two to end on?
Mate, that's up there with the Einstein bit at the start.
Yeah, well, I've bookended it beautifully.
Are you claiming those?
No, absolutely not. Anon. They're going anon. Okay. They're anon. But okay, mate, brilliant. Thank you very much for that half an hour of questionable power. I'll see you for another one soon.
Definitely, mate. Unless I've got something on, but you never know.
Which you won't have.
I won't.
All right, cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.